This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng. This is indeed a week for universities and music. Tomorrow we'll have folks from the Central Queensland University in Australia with us. But today, visiting us from an institution in West Virginia in the United States is Dr. Jared Sims, who not only plays the saxophone, clarinet, and flute, but travels to jazz events and also sits as the director of jazz studies at West Virginia University. He's in town and will be performing with WVC, a Malaysian jazz ensemble helmed by Tay Che Siang, and both of them are right here. Welcome to Malaysia.
Thank you for having me. It's an amazing pleasure to be here.
First time?
This is my first time in this country, and I've only been here for a couple of days.
What brought you here? Obviously, there must be this connection with Che Siang. Che Siang has his band called WVC. The WV, I assume, has connection to West Virginia. But the C, I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's West Virginia connection. You said it.
You brought him over here, Che Siang.
Yes, yes. About 6 months ago, in June 2017, I was invited back to my university to...
You went to West Virginia.
Yes, yes.
I should interject. This is one of our distinguished alumni. The invitation was to be the judge on the International Piano Festival.
Wow.
Yeah, I was there. So, and then I was asked to give a concert with local musicians over there. But at the same time, I met Dr. Jared Sims. He's now the head of jazz studies, which I think that would be a good opportunity to invite him to play with me. He just gracefully jumped in and also really blew my mind, his playing. So I thought, if you ever being in the region, please do come over to Malaysia. So he's now attending a conference in Bangkok, which it's very near to Malaysia. So I say, please come. I will try to make
it all possible.
Yeah. So that's why he's here.
Great, great. What's the repertoire for this concert?
We have some original songs, but I think we're also
letting the moment.
Yes, it's very much in the moment, and we know that the jazz is a music of tradition, and so part of that tradition is playing pieces that are pre-existing, and it's our way of thanking people who are great musicians before us, and also people who are really well versed in listening to jazz might know some of these pieces, and it's always good to hear pieces that you know.
You know, Malaysians on the whole like to hear what they're familiar with.
I think over the world, everybody
yeah,
do that.
It's
a comfort to kind of have something to hold on to. But at the same time, jazz, even though we are playing the tune that maybe everybody know, but for sure we're going to do something else on top of that fundamentals. So that means that if there's a tune that you know, let's say Fly Me to the Moon, you know that after the familiar melody, we're going to launch into something totally different. That's the improvisation part, which I think that's where musicians get to have fun.
Oh, exactly where we have fun, because if we do any of the same pieces from last night, I'm not going to play the same solo. And I might, just for fun, exact opposite of what happened the previous evening.
Is this the strategy? Seduce with the familiar and then take them to some place that they've never been before.
Well, I think so. And John Coltrane did it with My Favorite Things. You know, it was a piece that everybody knew. My Favorite Things was in
Sound of Music.
Yes, exactly. And he used that as a vehicle to launch into other things, as did Miles Davis. So a lot of great musicians before us have done the same.
Tell me about this thing called jazz music. If I remember my history lessons well, this was music for people with very low morals or the immoral people. When did this suddenly become music that's moral enough for the moral majority.
Well, you know, to clarify, prostitution was legal in New Orleans. Until, it was legal until 1918. But it's a very good question. A lot of people are really curious about that. When I've taught classes, of non-musicians, and I asked them what their connotation of jazz music is. And today the connotation is, oh, it's really fancy.
It's cool.
I personally played at the John F. Kennedy compound. So, you know, I played for Ethel Kennedy. She was supposed to be the first lady. So that's where I've seen this music. And I'm sure you've played for great dignitaries as well. That's the connotation that my young students have. It's all really fancy hotel music. you know, I think a complicated answer would be that the acceptance of African Americans into society and the normalization and civil rights has really made it acceptable. That's part of it.
But civil rights was not till the 1960s. I mean, I hear the golden age was somewhere between end of First World War and a little bit after.
Right. Well, we talk about that in jazz music. When the Second World War happened, the soldiers came back. And they'd fought for the country, and they said, well, we fought for the country. We should have equal rights. And I always think that jazz is a pretty important part of that because jazz has been heard throughout the world for, well, you know, maybe 100 years at this point. And what jazz stands for is the equality because, you know, it gives the individuals a voice. And so I think a lot of freedom has been achieved through that. That's still not answering your question about the morals. Well, you know, it was tough.
Oh, that we have changed our morals.
One of my favorite things that happened was ragtime was before jazz. And when the parents heard the syncopation, they said, don't listen to that. That causes brain damage, the syncopation.
Syncopation, something you musicians understand. What is syncopation?
Syncopation is off the beat. So can I play?
Yep.
This is not syncopated. To make it syncopated. It's embellished and it's syncopated. The syncopation is instead of having a very, very straight rhythm, dot, 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 to displace it, dot, 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 like, and that's what gets people dancing.
Yeah, get your booty moving.
At some juncture, jazz became quite respectable.
It's hard to deny that some of the greatest musicians on earth are jazz players. You know, one thing that I came across in my research, I did my doctorate in classical music, and it was a secret.
That one I know.
It was a secret that I played jazz because the institution was very traditional, even in the
United
States.
And they frowned on it, even though you were in the 20th century then.
Exactly. Well, when we studied 20th century music, they were so conservative, we didn't talk about things after 1920 because they said there's not a body of literature written for music after 1920, so we really shouldn't talk about it, which we thought was really funny. But they also told us in the practice rooms, no drum sets, no bass amps. It was very traditional, so I didn't let people know that I was a jazz musician. It was a secret. And this
closet
is all,
jazz player.
A closet jazz player. I did it when no one was looking. And this was this was not even 10 years ago. So it's hard to believe, but my point is in our research, we researched 20th century composers. Anybody you can name, whether it be Leonard Bernstein or Stravinsky or Ravel or anyone, and all of them, when we looked at what they listened to, they were influenced by jazz. And so I think that that's part of what elevated the music too, is you have great scholars that heard this music and they respected it.
We tend to think of jazz as something that some have even described it as, you know, when they talk about classical music that's American, jazz is classical music American. How fair would that be?
I think more and more that that's becoming what we agree. I would argue it's our greatest American composer has got to be Duke Ellington. We have Duke Ellington. Who else do we have? Thelonious Monk, Charles Mingus. These are all Americans. And to underscore Ellington, he didn't just write short songs. He didn't just write 32-bar AABA songs, really, really simple things. But he wrote things that symphony orchestras could be playing. very, very complex, long pieces of work. Duke Ellington is, in many ways, one of our greatest thinkers, I think. He used the instruments of his ensemble to the fullest. The low instruments. Like, this is a tenor sax that I'm holding. Typically, that would be an instrument that would be maybe an accompaniment instrument. There's even a baritone sax that goes even lower. But he would take these low instruments and have them play the melodies. And that was a new kind of sound. He created new sounds.
What makes jazz American?
Wow. You know, it's interesting to be in Malaysia because Malaysia has such an interesting confluence or connection, a lot of culture here. And that's what we brag about in the United States. I know that that is what makes jazz what it is. You know, we had people who were well-versed in harmony of the Western tradition, but also so many people that were so knowledgeable about rhythm.
But you often associate jazz with the African Americans and their contribution to music. But what I don't understand is that if you're talking about African Americans, but you have Africans who were taken as slaves to places like Cuba, Haiti, South America.
Okay, good. I understand your question. You're saying, okay, there's African Americans that went to Cuba. There's African Americans that went to Brazil. All throughout any of those countries and all those regions have different musical styles. And the United States has a different musical style than those. And I think the answer is simple. I wouldn't want to go into too much detail because it can become complex. One would be where the actual slave trade occurred. So, for instance, most of Brazil actually had come from the center of Africa. A lot of North America had come from countries like Ghana and Senegal. Some of the drumming, the reason Brazilian drumming sounds different than American jazz drumming is because the slaves were literally coming from a different place in Africa.
But you associate jazz with America rather than South America or with parts of Europe, because there were Africans who also went to Europe. I mean, I find it very fascinating that jazz is considered an American tradition.
Well, New Orleans is really the city where a lot of this has come about. It's become my favorite city. It's our only Caribbean city in the United States. It's the only place in the United States that's raised the Spanish flag, the French flag. And there's also a whole lot of Native American tradition. You know, that city is ancient. You know, there was a flood, Katrina, in 2005.
Yes.
The French Quarter didn't get affected. And through my research, I went to New Orleans and studied what was happening. Some of the most ancient parts of the city include the French Quarter, and that was actually a Native American settlement. Mm. So one of the streets right through the French Quarter was a Native American road, and it dates back to the 1200, 1300. The Native Americans knew that that wouldn't flood. But there's the Native tradition. There's also a whole lot of Haitians that came to the country during the Haitian Revolution. A flavor is the United States in terms of what I feel is really New Orleans. The culture, the food, the music, the drumming's even a little more different than the rest of the United States. It's a little more African in terms of the style.
I'm keen to find out, if we think of this music as an American tradition, why has it gone all over the world and what is it doing in Malaysia? I'm speaking with Dr. Jared Sims, a jazz musician and an academic, currently the director of jazz at West Virginia University. He's playing in a concert together with a Malaysian jazz ensemble, WVC, which is led by pianist Tay Che Siang. Coming up, why are Malaysians playing jazz? And what do students study in a music school about jazz? Which was at one time not talked about. This is Front Row, The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
It's easy to teach technique, and a lot of the students that we have are young and they have to work on technique. But jazz has to transcend technique. Jazz is about having your voice come out on your instrument. So it is a trap in education to only work on the technique. It's easy to assess technique, to say, I can pull out a sheet of paper and I can say what's correct and incorrect if I hear someone play some scales and some patterns. It's very easy to quantify. But the magic of the music is transcending beyond that.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Front Row on a Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with two jazz musicians, Teacher Xiang from WVC, and he has invited a guest to perform, Dr. Jared Sims. Teacher Xiang plays the piano and Jared the saxophone, and they'll be in a concert this evening and tomorrow evening, and it's simply called Jared Sims, a jazz concert by WVC featuring Jared Sims.
I feel honored.
Yeah. I mean, you are top billing.
Yeah.
We say that this is American tradition. What's the appeal of this American music to Malaysians? And why did it leave United States and go to Europe?
Yeah.
And then Asia. You know, Europe, I can understand, because, you know, if you are a European, you see other white Americans playing, this is music for us. But why Asia?
In the first place, for myself, my personal reason was I was moved by the music more than 25 years ago. When I first heard it, it was something foreign, but at the same time, somehow it just, you know...
It resonated with you.
Yeah, awakened something in me. Over the years, I've given it a lot of thoughts. I could even point it back to, in the 1980s, there was this advertisement of McDonald's. There was this this moon singing. I think he was Ray Charles. Ray Charles was singing. So he's this moon-looking guy playing piano and singing. He was singing kind of something that sounds like jazz.
Can I tell you what I think it was? Because I remember seeing this.
Can I play it?
Yep.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Mac the Knife.
Yes.
That's it?
Yeah.
I remember it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I remember it too.
It made me want to play jazz too, honestly. And I'm not from Malaysia.
At that time, of course, I didn't understand that it was jazz. You know, and then also from quite a few movies at that time, they like to put some jazz music in it. Because it kind of like awakens an era, especially the World War II era. So that kind of music, for some reason, just resonates with me. And I just love it. I couldn't get enough of it. And at that time, you can't just go on YouTube and just, you know, type jazz and then 5,000 million videos came out. But we have to go and search for it. I'm from Malacca. There was only one old record store that kind of have some real jazz. Or else, you know, if you go to other record store, they were like, oh, jazz. So they point to Kenny G, which wasn't what I was looking for. So that kind of music really, really, I think... just attracted me so much. That happened to a lot of other people throughout the world. So when first jazz was becoming popular, it was kind of 1920s, 30s. So we could even see that in Shanghai, there was this big jazz revolution. At that time, China was becoming more and more metropolitan, modernized. And the composers of that time would kind of take jazz syncopations, jazz instrumentations, and even the song forms, but put into Chinese traditional tunes, which then you have this fusion of sound, which until today, we are listening to all this Shanghai jazz to a lot of the Chinese audience. That is our music. But if you kind of like take it apart, you will find a lot of jazz in there. I think same thing happened to us in the 50s, 60s. To P. Ramlee and all the musicians of that time, Solianos, Boyles. Yeah, that music really speaks to a lot of us. After I studied it, so I find that what's the attraction there, especially to those ears that go for something more sophisticated, perhaps? It's that freedom. It's that charm of individuality. It really speaks to some of the souls that want that. So we will... kind of tend to go there.
Now, Jared, he has used a couple of words that we tend to associate with the American ideals, individualism, freedom.
Yeah.
I wonder, are those the elements in jazz that somehow make us all associate jazz with America?
I think so. I mean, those are words that we talk about in school from a young age. They tell us we're individuals and we have freedom. It manifests itself in the music in interesting ways. Most of the people that will hear this on the radio are listeners, and the easy way to hear it would be listen to Billie Holiday.
Blue moon, you saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart.
And after she sings only a couple of words, you know it's her. When you hear John Coltrane, it sounds like him. Some of our great musicians, Louis Armstrong as a singer, but also Louis Armstrong as a trumpet player. Hear and you know it is them, and that is really one of the things that we're trying to achieve with this music. We're not trying to imitate, we're trying to innovate and be individuals.
And may I interject, sorry. And at the same time, with the talk of freedom, individualism and all that, another thing that I learned a lot, which it kind of like also reminds me of how we grew up, is that other than just being an individual, but you have responsibility. You kind of play in a band. I'm not just a star that just try to show off, but I need to play in that context. If my band is four persons, we kind of take care of each other and we listen to each other before we speak. And what they say will influence where we go. Kind of, I think that is another aspect, perhaps a lot of time we kind of forget about this music is that it's about working together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes when we say we're in the moment, that's real easy, because it's real easy to describe that, because if I do something, if my action causes another reaction. But there's also to think of, well, if this solo went into this territory, the next thing that we should do collaboratively is have the band go in this direction. It's different than a lot of the music on the radio, where if you hear a Rihanna song, the Rihanna song is that song. It's just repeating and repeating and repeating. We have repetition in our music, but we're not trying to reproduce our record when we go to play live. That's one of the easiest ways to also understand it. You know, some of the greatest known artists, someone like Madonna. If you see Madonna live, her live show is going to reproduce the record. We're not trying to do that at all. We're trying to paint a picture in front of people. We're like artists who are painting a picture.
I mean, it's interesting to hear Che Xiang tell what created that interest and why he continues to pursue it. As an academic, what gets taught in the classroom that students would then say, oh, I want to go research on American jazz and its influence in Asia? What gets taught?
Wow. Well, there's a couple of aspects of the music. One would be the performance aspect. The other would be the musicological aspect. As far as what I see, when I have students that are interested in doing musicology and writing about music, I tell them, I really want you to come from the standpoint of someone who plays the music, because there are some things that are written about jazz that come from academics that don't play it.
Ooh, I see your face.
Yeah, to me, it can be a very awkward read. Jazz is also an interesting art form too, because so often we can just hear field recordings of Duke Ellington, just listen to what he said, and we can study it that way. Ethnomusicology is a little weird to me, because I'm wary of ethnomusicology, because I think it puts Western music on a pedestal and says,
frame everything around it.
I have a friend that's done everything but his dissertation in ethnomusicology, and he lost faith that he believes in ethnomusicology. But from the performance standpoint, much of what I do in terms of research is writing music and performing music and teaching students to write and perform. So that's a lot of the research. And at this point, is encouraging students to know the past, but to look forward to the future as well. It's really easy in academia to only play Duke Ellington tunes with the big band and forget composers that are new, maybe not even well-known, but new, and to keep pushing forward.
When you look at contemporary jazz players and those who are emerging, what is it you're looking for to say that these are new and they're forging a new path? This is a lead up to the question, where is jazz going?
Oh, It's going in a lot of different directions. I think this is almost an opinion question. For me, some of the most exciting stuff that I hear has some type of a Latin influence in terms of the rhythms of what's being played. Sometimes not necessarily what we call the old spangalings, zang, spangling, spangling, you know, to more straight, less swing even. There's that. A lot of people are playing in odd time signatures. Everybody knows Take Five. That was the first piece that was not written in a standard four. And so there's a lot of odd meters that are going on. One of the things that a lot of people are experimenting with are interesting instrumentations. I've played saxophone, but I've always been encouraged by other people to play more clarinet and bass clarinet because there's so few people that do it. I didn't bring my baritone sax to Asia, but I often play baritone sax. It's a unique voice. I have a friend that's a banjo player, and you don't normally associate jazz with banjo.
No.
So these are the things that people are doing.
Will string instruments come into jazz, like violins and violas? And I've seen a cello perform together with a jazz ensemble.
Yes. I have some friends that play these instruments, and I'm encouraging my students to do it too, to say if they have that individual voice, if they can swing – knowing the language of the music, the rhythmic style, and how to choose the right notes and how to phrase, the instrument almost doesn't matter at this point.
So how much is it a technical skill and how much of it is I feel this thing and therefore this is how I will manifest it? Because, you know, a classically trained violinist, I assume, will bow in a particular way. Mm-hmm. A jazz musician will bow differently.
Well, it's an interesting point. And to go back to your question about what we're teaching and so forth, it's easy to teach technique. And a lot of the students that we have are young and they have to work on technique. But jazz has to transcend technique. Jazz is about having your voice come out on your instrument. So it is a trap in education to only work on the technique. It's easy to assess technique to say, I can pull out a sheet of paper and I can say what's correct and incorrect if I hear someone play some scales and some patterns. It's very easy to quantify. But the magic of the music is transcending beyond that. The best examples, there's a new Coltrane documentary about John Coltrane, the great tenor saxophone player. You realize that he had the technique, but he also had the voice. And that's what makes the musicians really, really special.
Well, thank you both.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Jared Sims, who played with, among others, 10,000 Maniacs, Noel Gallagher from Oasis, will be playing with the jazz ensemble WVC at the Damansara Performing Arts Center this evening, Wednesday, January 17th, and tomorrow, Thursday, at 8 p.m. And tickets are priced at $55 with concessions with a D-card at $50. If you missed any part of this interview and would like to catch the whole, you can go to bfm.mind to download the podcast, or better still, install our BFM app and you don't have to miss anything. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast.
To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.